Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on June 24th, 2015. I guess that means that's the probably the last Weekly Manga Recap of June, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I remembered how many days there were in the month. That's good.
Did you want to wax nostalgic about June? Was that why it was brought up?
June is not special in the slightest. I mean, I guess for some people it's the end of a school year or something, but it's like, I don't care.
I just like to think that you're like staring at the calendar and that fucking song that played when Ash was gonna give up Pikachu was there, like, you'll be my friend to the end, like as you're flipping into July crying.
I don't even how did that song go? It's the time's come to say goodbye.
Yeah, the time's to say goodbye. It's just like, I know he's not going anywhere.
Butterfree actually left. He's probably dead now. Butterflies die after they migrate.
You're like, tell me what the fuck's happened to Pidgeot. He hasn't given it up yet, but I know he will.
He's not a Pidgeot yet. He's still a Pidgeotto. He leaves right after becoming Pidgeot. You mean right after he becomes decent? He's got to get a different flyer once he gets to Johto, so shut up.
Noctowl? It's barely even a bird.
It's a tiny Noctowl. It is a runt Noctowl. You're a terrible...
It's actually a shiny Noctowl, though. So it's actually a pretty big deal. I watch a lot of shiny streams now, Nick.
There are shiny streams. There's just people who are just like, and so I'm grinding and grinding and grinding until I get... Oh my god, that's horrible.
Alright, here's the thing. This is even the topic I wanted to start with, but I just had to bring this up because I am enchanted by this. Like, there are systems in place, like, different methods you can use that increase the chances you get of getting a shiny Pokemon. Like, you can use the Matsuda method, which involves, like, breeding two Pokemon from different countries, and that can bring it to, like, a 1 in, like, 518 chance or something like that. And people do that. The one that I find the most satisfying, though, are people who hunt shiny legendaries. Because the only way you can do that is to engage the legendary... See if it's shiny. If it's not, then you soft reset and do it over and over again, and you still have the same chance every single time. So you are literally just doing it until you nail that, like, 1 in 1,028 shot that you get a shiny.
So you're literally just, like, rolling a 1,000-sided die or something like that, and just rolling it over and over and over and over and over again until it actually comes up. You know,
yes.
God.
And I can't stop watching them, Nick. They're like my heroine. Like, I just watch it.
Do people talk over any of
this? Yeah, like, they talk. Like, they'll have, like, conversations.
Just doing nothing but just watching this. It's just like, yep, there it is. Like, you gotta at least be
still
talking
not
about
shiny.
Something.
Soft reset.
Honestly, like, if someone were to listen to our podcast while watching someone do that, I could get behind that still, because then you at least have something else to concern you while nothing is happening.
I mean, if you're watching this episode or listening to it, just recognize that in the time you get, like, from the start of this episode to the end, somebody out there is shiny streaming them fucking hunting a legendary.
They will not have succeeded.
Through the entire podcast, they will have been doing it and not have anything else by the end of it. But I love those streams. I can't stop watching them.
So, you actually left me a note
earlier
in the week.
I had a topic I wanted to make sure I brought up because I was a bit irritated, Nick. I had a mystery I had to solve.
Okay.
So, for those of you who don't know, I own a house with my brother. The two of us went in, we purchased it together, and we split most of the bills. You know, one of those being the cable bill. I think the cable bill was actually set up in my name because most of my information's applied to it. And we've had the same cable company for 2 years. So for 2 years now, I've had no issue whatsoever paying the bill. I log in, pay it, and I'm done. Just recently, though, I'm trying to log in, and I get an error. It asks me to answer my security question. I'm like, well, that's new. But normally it wouldn't be an issue because, generally speaking, I use pretty standard, like, you know, security questions. Like, what street did you grow up on? What high school did you go to? Stuff that has, like, a, you know, a static answer.
first pet, first car.
What's your mom's mother name? Yeah, like, the stuff that doesn't change. I did, like, who's your favorite author, and that one screwed me up for a bit because I couldn't remember who I selected. Because it was like, did I, you know, literally an author? Did Arthur Miller count? You know, that shit, that sort of stuff. This one was, what is a memorable place?
Oh, God.
And memorable place was in quotes, so I don't even know if it was supposed to be like an ironic memorable place or something like that. But I had no fucking clue what my answer was. I've lived in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania for 98% of my life. I lived very briefly in El Salvador, and all of my memories attached to it are horrible. So I was like, I would never have put that as a memorable place. So I started thinking, I was like, did I put like a fictional place? Like, I started answering like Narnia and shit. Like, yeah. It was just like, what did I put for this? I couldn't figure it out. So I tried to, you know, I put like the option, I don't remember my secret password. They're like, well, that's okay. Can you tell us your Verizon, you know, your Verizon phone number? You know, the number attached to the account. And I was like, I don't know that because we have some bullshit landline that you triple package this into that I don't use, so I don't know the number for it, and the only way to find out is to log into the account, so I don't have that either. And then they're like, alright, do you have your account info? And I was like, no, and I'm too lazy to go and grab it, so I'm just gonna not do this. So, like, two times this has happened, and I've just, both times I get to the end, I'm like, I don't fucking get this, I don't remember, and I rage quit paying the bill. So my brother finally, like, I was having dinner with my brother and sister, and my brother mentioned, like, hey, you know, why aren't you paying the cable bill? And I mentioned, like, oh, yeah, this security question, like, I can't answer it. It's bothering the piss out of me. At which point, my brother starts giggling hysterically like he's a third grader who the teacher just said, oh, well, the microwave, everybody, was invented by John Buttocks or something like that. Like, he's just hysterically laughing at this. And he reveals to me that when we first got this account and set it up, he set the secret questions. And the secret question, and he's just been sitting on it. For 2 years, he's been...
This is a prank?
He's been sitting on it. Because, Nick, the answer to what is a memorable place...
My dick or something.
...is Gay Street. I just need to stress how annoying this was on many levels. First and foremost, Gay Street isn't even creative. It wasn't like it was like Homo Boulevard or Queefy Lane. It was the easiest fucking question he could have, or answer he could have put in there. Dude, this does nothing but inconvenience everybody.
Neighborhood. More like your mommerhood.
Like, I was like, what was the, you're like the Joker. I'm like, what was your possible end goal in this beyond watching every, like, the world burn? You got nothing from this. You just
screwed yourself over. What if they canceled our cable?
I was like, I didn't pay the bill for like 2 weeks. The only person who suffered was us. I'm behind now, and I'm still gonna have to make up for it, but it's not like that's not gonna affect you.
So he literally was just waiting for like 2 fucking years for this.
For 2 years, he was just waiting for one day. For whatever reason, Verizon required me to put in my secret question, the answer to which was Gay Street, apparently. So I was very perturbed by that.
This reminds me of, like, not to go into, like, I'm going to try and keep this away from, like, bummer territory, but stories that people have told about Owen Hart that focus on how big of a prankster he was have focused on the fact that most logical thinking people would, you know, think, okay, what is the maximum amount of, you know, investment I'm going to put into this versus the payoff for what I will get out of it when I'm pranking somebody. And apparently Owen Hart had absolutely no concept of this and go to extreme lengths just to get a tiny little giggle. Your brother only, you know, probably spent probably a minute thinking of this question, but he still waited 2 years for the payoff.
I guarantee he only spent a moment. He's like, oh, I get to put the security question in? What would be the most hilarious answer? And because there wasn't one like, what's your favorite food, and he couldn't put dick cake as an answer, he was just like, oh, memorable place, Gay Street.
That's so fucking weird.
I don't get it, but hence the situation we are now in.
And on that note, Tayo Ye. gonna have to wait another week because both of us have had other shit going on in our lives, apparently involving pranks involving fucking Verizon security answers.
Yeah.
So, we are going to go right into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, beginning with Black Clover, page 18, Inside the Treasure Hall. So, apparently, this entire group of mages has just been like, alright, well, Asta's knocked out the bad guy, who vastly blew all of our expectations out of the water in terms of his power, so we're just going to leave him here, unguarded, but we put some bindings around him so he'll be okay. We're totally not gonna bite ourselves in the ass with this.
Naika is very cocky about it too. Like, will this hold him? He's like, please!
Anyone would be held back by this. And as the series is like, is this gonna work? You know? And they're like, of course it will hold! It's not so flimsy a wounded person could break it! And like, okay, geez, calm down, douche glasses. So, they're like, okay, let's go inside the treasure hall. How do we get in? There must be some sort of means of getting inside. What if there is a riddle that we have to solve? And Lux just like, it's made of magic, so just cut through it. So he's like, ah, my sword solves everything!
That almost felt like it was a parody at that point, where it's just like, we've run into this dilemma, but don't worry, it's made of magic, so your sword can literally just stop it and cut through it.
So the inside, it's just hoard of fucking treasure. Just literally like Scrooge McDuck's vault. It's just piles of gold everywhere. Smaug would be like, geez, dude, calm down a little with this.
He's like, get some humbleness. This is ridiculous.
So Asta makes the gleamy eyes because, oh my god. And then they're like, ooh, treasure, and raced around and getting stuff. It's like they've just invaded Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. Like, oh, look at this! Look at this! Look at this! Or to go back to DuckTales, like that scene at the beginning of the movie, where they're just like, oh, look at this thing! Look at this thing! Look at that. Did anyone else see that movie? Please? DuckTales the movie.
No.
It's a good movie. You shut the fuck up, Chris.
I didn't say it was a bad movie. I just said I hadn't seen it. Perhaps there was more judgment in my voice than I intended, but it was unintentional, I swear.
Okay. But the most important thing that happens is that Yuno comes across this scroll, and he's like, oh, the fuck is this thing? And he doesn't recognize the writing, can't seem to read it, but his tome glows after he picks up the scroll, and the scroll glows, the writing vanishes, and apparently goes into his book. And this is something that shocks absolutely everyone who sees it, which is basically the entire Golden Dawn squad, which seems to indicate that this type of behavior might actually be very rare. So, interesting.
Do you think he got new spells, Nick?
Ah!
I've heard other suggestions. Some people were like, I don't know, maybe it's the writing like cursed his book, or...
It might be a curse, but I imagine, I mean, obviously something's been written into his book.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's... apparently an important little event, though, so who knows. Nero, the little magic crow guy, starts really bothering the fuck out of Asta and drawing his attention towards something, and can't really seem to figure out what it is, but, you know, intelligence is not his strong suit, so whatever. Lux suddenly notices something with his magic senses, like, everybody run! And then Mars, you know, the crystal guy, just bursts through the wall and is like, yeah, those bindings you put on me, nah, fuck that. Who cares? I was wounded. That means I couldn't break out of it.
Well, it's actually a big deal that he did so, because he did it with a different magic type.
Yes. He has fire recovery magic. And they're like, what the fuck? And they actually establish one of the rules of the universe, which is that everyone only has one mana inside them. You know, there's fire, wind, earth, and water, and then there are subtypes in between those. So wind and water make mist. Wind and water make mist, for example. Earth and water make plant. And that kind of thing.
Well, no, I don't think it's... that they combine. It's just that they're...
It seems to be related to that, because, you know, you got wind and fire make smoke next to it, and basically there are subtypes.
Yeah, basically the different elements break down further, and I'm just waiting, like, do we want to call it now? Sub-element of light shows up at one point. They're like, a fifth element!
Well, yeah, or something like that. So, you know, lightning, I guess, is related to wind, basically, and that kind of stuff. So everyone has one sort of element within each mage, and then they can have, let's see, it says specifically, mages can only use magic from their own mana or from a single attribute derived from it, which is very important because fire and crystal are completely unrelated to each other, apparently. Or mineral, I guess, is... Mineral
would be earth magic, and, you know, fire would obviously be fire magic, so he shouldn't have both.
And also, specifically, they also say he was using pure attack magic before, and now he's using recovery magic, and so the fact that he has two is also exceptional. Apparently, Mars grew up alongside the same woman who later gave birth to Luck, because, you know, I don't know. I'll just get major flashbacks from that, you know, light-haired woman whose eyes are obscured for some reason, roughly generally the same hair length, it looks like, so, yeah.
I hope it's because there's a hidden twist that one person is behind all the bad things in all these characters' lives. Like, it's just one fucking mom who's been darting from kid to kid screwing with them.
And then it's like, and then she takes her mask off and it's like, it's me, Aizen!
I'm like, holy shit, you really fuck Gay Street, this was the long con, fucking Bleach. Yes, I said Bleach was ending. I didn't say any other series weren't going to end, though.
So basically within Mars's little flashback here is just this girl saying, you're going to be a great warrior, Mars, I know it, and then later on reaching towards his face going, I'm sorry, this is all I can do, and that's all we really see of it. Still, of course, kind of not really sure what happened. And then Noelle remembers, I have water type magic, so I'll try and extinguish the flames. And Mars like, the fuck you will! And just...
Bitch!
Giant crystal fist backhands her, and she bleeds fucking everywhere. So, yeah, that doesn't look very good.
She has, she's got them dead or alive titties, though.
Yeah, the nicely torn open the top so that, you know, the shards of clothing only just cover the nipples. But the blood does distract from that, I will say.
Well, no, I didn't mean that.
That is actual, like, physical harm right there.
Well, what I meant, though, is if you ever saw, like, videos of Dead or Alive, whatever, the volleyball game.
Oh, the individual boobs.
Yeah, like, for some reason, the boobs would, like, move independent of each other. Like, well, they just flopped about. And I don't think it's actually as bad as I first, like, when I first noticed it, but it does look like
there's... It is definitely far more exaggerated than it really is. I've seen the same stuff, yeah. It's like, they're like, oh, with revolutionary new technology, we can have these individual physics, which is how actual parts of your body do work. But when they're that together, one generally is not going left and up while the other is going right and down constantly, just from you, I don't know, moving forward and backward.
I think, Mick, what this means is that Noelle also has two different types of magic. She has water and breast magic. And we're setting up a rivalry right here.
Oh, God. So,
that does look savage, though.
Everyone's in a bind because Noelle's been just destroyed. Got hit by a bunch of it. Lux's foot got caught in some crystals. Glasses douche got hit by a wave of it. So it looks like basically just Asta is left, sort of. And so he charges in with his cleaver, and Mars says, well, you can shatter magic with your sword, but how about if I just hit you with magic that is faster than your sword can move? Like, that seems logical. Yeah.
He's like, well, that's unfair, jerk.
So just giant constant barrage of these mineral harpe, I don't know how you pronounce that word, H-A-R-P-E, harpe, I don't know, bunch of freaking daggers, basically, made of crystal, constantly bombard him, knock him into a wall next to the wall, actually, that Nero was trying to draw his attention towards. His sword goes flying, and Ness is like, oh no, I'm screwed. He changes Fiance down his magic. I don't know, and Noelle's gonna really die if I don't do something. And then Nero flies past him and lands on top of his cleaver. And that's where the chapter ends.
It's a new sword upgrade.
What, it changed?
Yeah, because you see it, like, flies into that weird, I don't know what you'd even call it, like a circle relic thingy. It smashes into that. The bird was already trying to lead him in that direction, but it smashes into that when he goes flying. Then it lands, and then he looks at the sword. The sword's different now. The sword's presumably stronger now, but it is an upgrade.
Because that's the need to get stronger.
Well, look, it's not necessarily that it needs a stronger sword, but I'm not going to be like, oh man, you know, we can't get an upgrade already. I mean, it's...
Well, this is around the time in Shonen manga where it's like, okay, time to, you know, do a bunch of upgrades, you know, for a main hero. They tend to only slow that down later on.
So. Yeah.
It was just a really weird kind of sequence for me because I did not recognize that the sword looked any different.
I believe it is. It seems to be, if it's not his sword that's changed, it's another sword, but I believe it's... Actually, wait, no. No, it must be a different sword altogether because...
Well, why does he need a different sword?
Well, because he gets knocked through this wall. His sword goes flying into that little fucking gate dongle. Then he goes flying backwards. His sword embeds into the ground in front of him. But the sword that he sees is behind him, so it's...
I'm not even going to, like, take that into account.
It's two separate swords, apparently. Okay. Anyway, he's getting a new sword. Yeah, look, if this is also a way for them to be like, alright, look, you know, maybe there's an alternate fighting style to the way he uses this one, or some other mechanic to it, I mean, it could be something that spices up Asta. I mean, he still needs kind of like a backstory, but yeah. I'm all for it. Go for it. And I like the idea that Mars is becoming an intimidating figure. It was going to be kind of lame if he seriously just, like, this guy who's supposedly, like, the best, you know, soldier of an entire country was just, you know, queefed on by some kid with a sword that just nerfs him.
Right. So,
I can take it.
All right, let's move on to Bleach, chapter 631, Friend. Oh boy, guys, it's that Baz B flashback we were all for.
Somewhere out there, Nick, someone has been waiting for this to happen. There's somewhere out there, there's a person, he's like in his Baz B t-shirt, just like, I knew it would happen one day. If I just believed hard enough.
Right, so... Okay, look, alright. First off, something occurred to me a couple days ago. Bleach has been so forgettable and boring and repetitive over, like, the past month. I'm pretty sure there have been a couple of different episodes where we've just, like, forgotten to do the whole Unohana's dead thing. Like, that's how, like, little, like, I care about any of this. I can't even continue the running gags, alright? I'm sorry, I think I've fallen behind. And if I haven't, that just shows how awesome I am. It's like, even on autopilot, I will remember that shit. I don't know. So, at least something's different going on. It's just like, out of everyone who could have had this big flashback is like, Baz B. So I understand Jugo Hochschwald is more important, but still, it's like, yeah. You know what I wanted to see from Bleach? You know, Kid Baz B playing superhero with his little crossbow thing. Whatever.
Well, look, if they're gonna make us care about Baz B, at least I'm getting this. I think I'd be more infuriated if it were just a showdown between Baz B and Hochschwaltz, and then, like, we didn't get this, but they tried to still make it like it was such an emotional deal, like Baz B being like, we were friends, or something, like, gain it. Look, I don't really give a fuck about Baz B, but that's because I have little fucks to give about Bleach at this point, but I can at least appreciate, like, alright, we're trying to do something to make these final characters that are still left have some significance. I guarantee, I would almost put money on it, that as soon as this flashback ends, if not in the chapter it ends, the chapter afterwards, Baz B is dead as shit.
Yeah.
But at least these characters seem like they're not... Like, My worry is that those four, whatever the fuck they were called, the SS, that's right, I forgot they had the most offensive name they could. The SS are just going to be four disposable power units. They're just going to have some wacky ability, and then they die. And I'm like, what a fucking lame thing to do with your, you know, final four characters or whatever. So if they can make these, like, remaining people they have left have some significance beyond Burner Finger, then I'm all for it.
Let me see if I remember this correctly. They were kids. They met in the woods while they were both hunting. Baz killed a rabbit.
Yes.
And they introduced themselves to each other. Baz was like, you can have the rabbit because I don't care about hunting for food. I just do it to show how awesome I am to the denizens of the woods. I don't fucking know. Apparently there's a great audience out there in the wilderness for Bazby. Yeah. And so basically he was just trying to give, you know, Jigo the rabbit so that he could take it home so that his apparently abusive father wouldn't get mad at him.
Abusive uncle, Nick.
Uncle. Oh, so different.
Although, it's a bit weird because they don't really go into what the uncle does.
Yeah.
But he has a line, and I've heard that there's perhaps maybe some controversy with how Viz translated it, but the uncle has this line that says, I told you not to come out in the force. I'm useless without you. You know that. I guess the thing is that maybe the uncle's actually supposed to be saying, you're useless without me. Because when I read the line, I'm useless without you, I almost start to worry this is like a pederasty thing going on, like something disturbing. I think it's maybe just supposed to be that he... I don't know. They don't go into it. He's bad, presumably. He's very bad.
Well, he's also like cloaked in shadow as if he is going to be important or something. I don't know.
He's definitely not, because his fucking ass is burned. I think it was just... Oh, man. I need a reason to make this guy, like, sympathetic, so fuck it, he's a bad person. Why? I don't know. He's a bad person who dies in a fire. A bad person who dies in the fire was mean to fucking Hasselwaltz or whatever. Yeah. Done.
Baz, like, hatches this plan to kill Geobach after he burns down this little castle where Baz's clan was, and then years passed, and Juhabak tells Eyepatch Sasakibe, let's call him, he's making a new combat unit, and they're going to use it to conquer Soul Society. And they're like, what do you mean? And he's like, we will need a new force, a unit known as the Stern Ritter. So presumably then this goes back to the first time that that Juhabak tried to overthrow the Soul Society, or did Hoshwald and Bazby, are they just like both 18? I don't know.
Well, I thought they said that this was 200 years ago.
It had
ago.
To be hundreds of years ago, yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned this is like 200 years ago or something like that. I forget.
How long was the fucking prophecy supposed to last again? For his
It like 900 years he'll sleep, 900 years he like wakes up and gets something back, and then 9 years for something. It was like 1,000 years, I think, basically.
Well, if that's the case, then how did this happen then?
You know what, Nick?
Was he just like planning this whole time? Well, not actually being asleep? I'm confused. I have to check this now, because this is going to bother me.
Well, he's been awake for a while now, just not at full strength, if I recall. Fuck, you're making me try to think about Bleach, Nick, and you know that's hard for me. I'm trying to think what was literal and what was metaphorical when they refer to him being awake. I think he's been awake...
Oh, wait, the sealed King of the Quincy. Over 900 years, he shall recover his heartbeat.
Okay.
Over 90 years, he shall recover his intellect. Over 9 years, he shall recover his power. And over 9 days, he shall recover the world. Okay.
So this is 200 years ago, days, so he's still in his heart thing.
He's still a zombie, Chris. Walk around without any heartbeat going.
Well,
he's still fine, though.
They're all ghosts of some variety, aren't they?
Like, I had the impression then that this meant that he, like, was only recently putting all this together. Apparently not. Apparently, I'm very confused. And I demand a clear explanation, which I'll never get because those don't happen in Bleach.
I could have sworn there was some line, maybe it was last week, where something, like they said something, but I guess not, because the only time thing I see in this is that Basby says 5 years went by from when like, we're going to kill him to...
So, the suggestion is that this actually was 1,000 years ago, and he had been alive for 200 years. That's, like, something that happens, like, in the series. So, Hochwald and Baz were instead part of his attack force 1,000 years ago, when he first created the Sternrers, 1,000 years ago. So, apparently, this means that not only did the Soul Society fail to kill off all the Quincy, they actually failed to kill off the ones that actually helped Jihabak.
They failed to kill off a lot of Quincy, because apparently they had their own fucking country at one point.
Yeah, because I actually, this causes problems still, because I was under the impression that a large number of the people within the Sternritters were, like, new.
You have to. I can't fathom that fucking Gremmy has... Gremmy had 900 years to use his power, and he can only think of fucking rocks from space?
So I guess then that means that there is, like, an arc of seniority with some people. So I can actually understand Basby Gones, like, dude, I've been waiting for, like, 1,000 fucking years to get into this. And you just say, nope, not chosen, bro. It's like, that's a little bullshit. Actually, wait, is that mustache guy with the eye patch, is that the guy who freaked out during the call-opening thing?
No, because he had two eyes. He didn't have an eye patch.
Who the fuck is this guy then?
I don't know. He even has a name. They give him a name. Seidlitz. So, unless that's the name of the country and Jihabak's naming it, he's apparently a character, but he's not part of the Sternritters. So, I guess...
There's so many of these guys, it's so easy to lose track of them.
Well, remember, Nick, even Kubo himself lost track of it. There's one Sternritter who was, like, not... who exists, but he doesn't have a letter because he's used them all at this point.
God, I hate Bleach. Okay, so... Yeah, that's what happened. It's a flashback to...
I like how we spent, like, 10 minutes trying to figure it out, came to the conclusion of, like, I don't get it, and you just followed up with, so that's what happened.
Basically, Jihabak's making his attack force to go after Soul Society 1,000 years ago. We know how that turned out. This is more about, I guess, how Hochwald and Baz B joined Jihabak. The hook, I assume, being, how the fuck did Hochwald go from being like, yeah, okay, I guess we'll go kill Jihabak, to being literally the most loyal person to him and the entire army over the course of over 1,000 years. That is what is supposed to be the hook. Still don't care.
It is. We'll see what happens from it. It was just a weird way to end the chapter with, like, him being like, and they would be the Sternritter. And I'm like, 80% of the Sternritter are dead. Like, this grand imposing group you've created is almost entirely wiped out at this point. I wouldn't have made this the cliffhanger.
Okay, let me see if I can find it. Did it say among him among the deceased? Fuck! I don't see him anywhere. Never mind.
Are you trying to find this guy?
I was trying to find him in Bleachwikia, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not this country. Seidlitz. Okay, yeah, that... Not this country, Seidlitz. No, that's his name.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's Seidlitz, but he must not be...
I actually googled him, and apparently he showed up in another volume at some point, so I don't know. Okay, let's just move on. I don't care.
Are you Fairy sure? Tale. We don't want to spend, like, 4 more hours trying to figure out Bleach?
Fairy Tale.
Are all of them ghosts, Nick? Chapter 441 of Fairy Tale... Caracol Island. Actually, hold on. Can I find out what was the name of the chapter of One Piece where Luffy punches out the fucking Celestial Dragon? Because they should have just called it that. the chapter starts
the
off...
The one where Luffy punches out the Celestial.
Yeah, they might as well have just called it that. Whatever that chapter was, like, they should have called it, like, One Piece chapter 600 or 512 or whatever it was. Actually, I think it might have been 500. Maybe it was. Can't remember. Anyway, it opens up with the A-Team, I guess we can call them, traveling by boat. Yes. A-Team traveling by boat, Natsu's getting sick, and hilariously, Wendy is now also getting sick, I guess,
Because he's a dragon.
Yeah, well, she used to be motion sick, but I guess you develop it with age, or whenever you cut your hair and it grows back, like you get new powers, or something like that. But what is actually amusing is that Gray picks them both up and says, I'm going to get you two to your quarters, and then he opens the door, and for some reason all of his clothes are gone. And I just find it very amusing, like, he pops out, and he's, like, almost posing.
Like a little sexy pose.
Like, he's like a GQ model, like, all good now. But missed the... I forget what his actual name is. Fuck it. Doran Bolt goes up to talk to Urza and is like...
You basically said it. It's like messed.
Yeah, it's like messed, but it's confusing because there's also Messed Gun, who is also fucking Gerard. It's a lot of layers. This guy might still turn out to be Gerard. I'm not 100% certain he's not. He basically talks to Urza and they go over kind of what we've already had, but more supposition on what Makarov did and what, you know, some mysteries surrounding Lumion Historia and... You know, it presumably could have stopped all the thousand weapons of Faze and must have something to do with the master, the first master's body being inside the crystal. They talk a bit about they're heading towards the main continent. They're going to stop off on an island, though, called Caracol Island. And then we cut away to our B team, which now includes Elfman, because I guess he couldn't catch a ride on this ship as an alternate.
He got demoted.
Yeah, he's been dropped from A rank to B rank team.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
The A rank and B rank teams in the tournament each had 5 members.
Yes.
So they're going to have. So Gajiel's like, we will reunite the B team, which somehow now has 7 members because Lissana had to come along as well. And they're still going to find Lax.
I actually don't see Lissana on there.
Isn't that Lissana next to Mirage?
No, that's. Oh, wait, maybe it is. I thought that was.
Because she changed her hairstyle, remember?
I'm trying to. Yeah, it is. Okay. She is there. I don't know why she's there as well. Well, actually, they have 8 members.
Well, because... honestly, well, yes, if you can include Panther Lily, my mistake.
No, no, I wasn't counting Panther Lily because Levy shows up then.
Right. God, how many fucking people are on this 5-man team?
Well, here's the thing. There was 6 men in each team in the tournament because there was 5 team members and then 1 alternate you could switch in and out.
Right.
But, yeah, fucking... Lissana is like an odd person out who's just like, I'm fucking here because...
My brother and sister came, so I... If you buy two, you get a third free.
I'm just this fringe relevant character in the series for some reason.
Speaking of the tournament, that is the point in the series where she said the immortal line where she saw that Yukino had shown up and she was like, oh, a white-haired younger sister, I guess this makes me like unnecessary now.
No! My fetish! So yes, Elfman's joined up with Team B, and they're going out to find, Laxus and his group, and, Elfman's like, oh, all of them are there, and, I guess it's, yeah, Kana's the one to joke, like, oh, you only want to see Ever, and I'm like, I heard, they were dating.
They dated.
Yeah, why wouldn't he want to see his, still girlfriend, I don't know, maybe they broke up in the year they were fucking off, whatever, but...
I don't even know if anyone actually knew about that, so maybe she thinks it is teasing.
Yeah. I have to feel like somebody...
Levy shows up!
Well, hold on. I thought there was something else that happened. No, never mind. It comes up a little bit later. Levy shows up. And actually, what is a sort of a cute moment where she shows up, basically interrupting Gajiel talking about how they have to sneak in because they don't have a chance, and she, you know, follows up by being like, you know, the chances of this mission are as close to 0% as to be negligible, and that's why, you know, we have to do everything we can to ensure that we don't break this up. But I can't believe you leave me behind. That's just plain rude. So, you know, Gajiel makes a joke. He's like, oh, but I thought you were so tiny. Maybe you were hiding in my bag. So she has this, like, little thing where she's like, oh, you know, you're a dummy. And, you know, Luvia's like, oh, a couple that can express, you know, romantic feelings towards one another? What is this? And then Kana responds by being like, I'll fuck you.
You know, at that moment when they have it, just like, you know, Kana's always been the one to have that, you know, skinship, you know, cheesecake, because she bothers Lucy all the time to the point when they reunite, she's like, oh, you're fondling my boobs. And then Hemi is like, is Kana just supposed to be a lesbian? Like, is she? Like, because I don't actually... The thing is, I don't actually know. Like, she does it all the time, but I don't know if it's just like, it's because she's drunk, or she's flirty with everyone, or it's like...
Is she even drunk right now?
Well, you don't know, because it's Kana.
Has she had time to drink? I just want somebody to be like, it is 6 a.m. You don't even have alcohol-related magic. You have a problem. We need to stop enabling you by having our guild at a bar.
You're not Bacchus. You can't just do this.
But, specifically, Nick, Levy reiterates, the enemy this time is seriously dangerous. I don't want anybody even thinking of doing battle with them. I'm super serial.
Cut to the group that will definitely not make that sort of error.
They stress it so much, Nick, in like two chapters. We can't fight these guys. It's a big deal. So we cut away to this group who's going to cause shit immediately because you brought along Natsu, you dumb fucks. And they're like, oh, hey, there's, you know, they're looking for spies, so we're going to have to go incognito. And again, they've built up this country to be a very big, imposing threat that, you know, this continent, I forget what, the Empire, that's what they call them. This Empire is the collective forces of over, 700 guilds? It's massive. They're trying to build this up as a threat. You know what the quickest way to undermine that threat is? To have the guards get intimidated and give up, you know, fucking pursuing a possible threat because of boobs. They are defeated by cleavage because, of course, they're near a beach, so all the girl characters, who are of course put front and center, just so you're very aware that it's Cheesecake, they're the ones put front and center, including Wendy and Charla, who's a cat, even though she turns into a person, I still can only see that as a cat, which is disturbing to me. They had used fake guild marks to pose as Wendy's former guild, and, you know, the Emperor guys are like, poof, no one from that con's even worth knowing. So they, you know, Cheesecake and shove their tits in front of themselves, and they're like, well, you guys can go on ahead. So they do. And someone reiterates, and that's like, hey, make sure you don't fucking doof this one up, buddy. And he's like, I won't doof it up. And everyone's like, yes, you will. But for some reason, we brought you along anyway. Immediately cut to a kid crying because someone took his daddy, and a guard's going to punch him. Because I guess these guards are completely, like, abjectly devoid of fucking anything but pure evil. They're about to punch a child in the face with a sword. So, of course, Natsu and the team run in, punch the guards down. Everyone's like, holy shit, I can't believe you did this. I can't believe in less than a month you fucking pulled your fucking payoff for this bullshit about how you couldn't possibly attack people from this nation. Wow. I feel like you want a record.
Actually, there's something that kind of bothers me about that picture where they're all punching out the guards. And that's the fact where Wendy is just like, I am the support, I don't punch people. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. So she's like, so I will protect the child by grabbing his head and shoving it against my chest.
Yes. With her rear thrust out.
And,
action pose.
Like, that... First of all, that kid is fucking tiny if Wendy can bend over like that and still be towering, like, head and shoulders above him. Secondly, why is she dressed like that? Thirdly, why is she shoving his head into her motherly breast, which is not motherly and is, in fact, prepubescent and disturbing, and stop it. I lost my point.
It's gross.
I don't like seeing Wendy in sexy poses. That's the point. At least Lucy got to do something.
Yes. Holy shit. I can't... Oh, this was a stupid, stupid chapter.
Another thing that gets me is, like, they do this whole thing where just, like, the guard just like, boobs, go ahead! Now, I can understand if the point is that the guards are all, like, never been with a girl, incredible pushovers, you know, like that. But I think that the sentiment is more supposed to be, it's like, no, you know, all hot-blooded males would fall for that cleavage and those pouty expressions and stuff. This is a really weird thing to be saying in criticism of a shonen manga that's intended for, you know, a younger audience, but that guard should have just been said, hey, you want to go around the back and then we'll see about letting you through.
Yeah, like, it wasn't like they were like, oh, we'll blow you if you don't fucking check our passports. They were
just like, check out our boobs that you can see in a billion girly magazines that do exist in
the universe. Or you could just watch them as they leave, or when you take us off to prison to arrest us, or whatever. They're just like, oh, I got to stare at your tits! Just go! You've won! I have no idea how to react from here! I have an erection, and I don't know where I go! What's step two?
Oh, God.
Now, I just got so annoyed that in this... because we found out about this empire, like, 3 chapters ago. And every chapter since then, they built in, like, they're so huge, they're so powerful. You can't fight these guys directly. You can't. And already they fought them directly. Because you know they were going to. But it's also the method they did. It was the cheapest, laziest fucking way of, like, you know, some fucking 3-year-old kid's like, I want my daddy back! And the guard instead of just being like, go away.
Fuck you,
it's like, I'm gonna dagger punch you in the face. It's like, come on.
I mean, imagine if they had taken the time where Urza and Lucy were just like, boobs, and instead dedicated all of that time to, you know, we are humble tourists, and then let them through immediately, and then spent 2 or 3 more pages of the kid getting abused and there being build up. Even that would have made it multiple times as good.
Yeah. I mean, it still wouldn't have been great,
but we'd be like, oh, okay.
No. It is literally a page from when this kid is introduced to when he's about to get stab punched in the face.
It's like, Jesus. Those guards are, you know what their problem is? It's just that they are impulsive as fuck. You know, it's just like, I saw boobs, go ahead. I hate children. Gah!
It's like, you know, I know what's going to kind of happen here.
These guys must not be representative of the Empire if they are, like, this easy to jump to decisions.
Like, yeah, like, they must suck. They must be awful, but it is really just, like... because, you know, I think to when this happened in One Piece, when, you know, Luffy punched out the Celestial Dragon, and it was this huge moment, because we had seen them over the course of that arc doing heinous shit, and... it finally had that moment where you're just like, oh, finally someone's going to attack them. Because we saw people paralyzed at the idea of fighting back against them. We saw people get shot instead of willingly fighting against them. So it had that impact when Luffy did it, and it immediately had that payoff where you're like, oh no, this is a big deal because fucking Kizaru just came in and fucking kicked your shit in. Like, 11 of you just kicked all of your shits in. I don't think we're going to get that same thing next week. I don't feel like next week we're going to get the same, like, oh, they shouldn't have punched those bad guys. It's just, Especially because in One Piece, it was also, you could even argue, like, well, that was Luffy letting himself lose control. And I guess Hachi was going to get killed. So I guess it is in a slight similar manner. But it's just like, well, yeah, no shit, these guys are going to punch them. It's that or watch a child get, like, fucking... It was just not very well handled in an otherwise very dumb chapter.
Okay. Let's move on to Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, chapter 123, Don't Fear the Heat. So, first off, we start off with Megumi and Soma going and checking out the Polar Star Dorm's little project for the festival, which is this whole thing Ishiki has set up where it's like, oh yeah, we're going to, you know, have all these vegetables that are grown in our own garden, and it's going to be like this outdoor evening type of thing. We got these like potato dish there was going to have and stuff. And Ishiki's like, okay, and you know, in order to have a true imoni party, which is Japanese tradition I'd never heard of, okay, where it needs to be by a river. And so someone's like, oh. Okay, so maybe if I can put it here and then put the bend there, and so it's just, well, you're planning to just fucking dig a river. Well, okay, good luck with that. That's just it. It's like they go out somewhere else to check other stuff out. And they see what Kuga's doing, and he's, you know, getting his entire Chinese Food Research Society going. It's like, okay, move! Do this! I think he's, like, flicking something in his hand around. Is that a whip? He just got a whip! Holy crap! I didn't realize that the first time I read through this.
But they're like, yeah, this is fun.
Okay. And so Kuga says, oh, so, how much progress have you made on your booth? Well, not much. I mean, I got to work on the recipes I want to use. And Kuga's like, okay, you know, but, you know, you got to have your storefront all prepared. And if you end up in the red, you're going to get expelled. And that would really suck. So don't get expelled. Bye! Or he actually says toodles, which is kind of funny. Soma then goes and tries to practice his recipes, and he has Megumi there to help him taste test stuff. And so he focuses on trying to make super spicy stuff, and he makes this incredibly spicy dish, and then presents it to Megumi while his lips are swollen and red. And so she's intimidated, takes a bite, and literally breathes fire. So, and this goes on for a little while, and poor Megumi just keeps on going. He's like, it's so spicy, Hata. And then eventually he just thinks to himself, you know, it doesn't matter that I'm getting spicy, spicy, spicy. Which of course, you know, Megumi's like, I ate all of them, look. And he's like, yeah, but none of these are going to work. He's like, I ate them for nothing.
You fucked me.
Whoa.
You fucked me, Soma.
You fucked me in the mouth.
You did me dirty.
Someone's like, Megumi, you've just been staring into space, not saying anything. Why do you have this weird expression? Nothing.
Nothing. And just in her mind, she's like, I'm going to kill you tonight. I'm going to pour gasoline down your throat and then light a match up your nose and see what happens.
See how you like it, motherfucker. So Megumi gives this little speech that she... this proverb, apparently, that she heard from China, which is the Sichuan Chinese fear no spice. Hunan Chinese don't fear it, spicy or not. Oh god, that's gonna kill me. Guizhou's Chinese fear it isn't spicy. So someone's like, ha, that's crazy. Ah, I guess the people from those regions really love their spicy food. Yes, that is what that means, Soma. Very good. So they're, you know, go back and forth. It's like, oh, you know, the spice and the umami and so on and so forth. They're talking about, it's like, well, yeah, you know, what Kuga has done is that he has taken a staple of Chinese food and add his stamp all over it. I'm sorry, I made that sound dirty unnecessarily. Basically, you know, he says, you know, it is the kind of dish that brings to mind the face of the chef who made it, which, of course, is something that was discussed during his big training arc in the, you know, stagiaire week, so... then he hears a commotion outside. Arian and Alice are arguing. So once again, someone has just stumbled across Arian for something like the third straight chapter. So Arian is saying, oh, what are you thinking, Alice? You can't be serious. Like, I totally am, cousin. So stop getting mad at me, you know, whatever. That kind of discussion, basically.
It can't be... Like... It's weird that, like, anytime she has to have, like, a long discussion, you don't get the impression she's a Valley Girl. It's only, like, when she has, like, one-liners where she'll just be like, you know, you're a bitch. Like, it's only, like, she goes on, like, a 20-minute thing and you don't get the impression from that she'd be a Valley Girl. It's only, like in her one-liners for some reason.
Yeah, which is why I don't like that detail. It's like, it doesn't really fit.
Also, what are they, cousins?
Yes, they are.
Okay, I didn't realize that at first.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there we go.
They established that with the Leonora, I think was her name. Alice's mother and Arina's aunt.
Ah, okay.
In the finals, yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, Nick. The first time I saw them like fighting and found out that they're related, I was like, oh, that'd make for some hot incest. The fan fiction started writing themselves. Mostly just so I can imagine her in like these shitty Valley Girl things. Like, oh my god, what huge breasts!
You're like totally stacked right now.
Oh my god, I'm like gonna come. Whoa, I'm making Penny super here.
Like the least convincing.
Oh my god, I could water my garden with my panties right now.
It like feels so good. I just can't even.
I'm so sorry this went in that direction. Sometimes I am ashamed of myself.
Soma was just like, oh, hey, Nakiri Bunch. And I was like, oh, hey, Yukihira. And Eren was like, who are you calling Nakiri Bunch? It was like, and now it's just like, is this supposed to be a Brady Bunch joke? Because it sounds like that. And then he basically runs by them his dilemma, and Alice offers her basically stance on it. Now, what you probably don't know about Alice, Chris, is that all of her cooking techniques are actually based on science. Like, she has a lot of, up-to-the-date, modern, science-based methods of doing stuff. So that is her gimmick, basically. So that is why she's the one to give the explanation behind all this stuff. Basically, she says that spiciness, according to biochemistry, I think that is actually her specific thing. It is a pain response, spiciness is. And she goes on this long discussion of stuff, and eventually someone just says, ah, so spiciness is addicting, literally. And then he goes on something about, like, Japanese jokes. Oh, you know, spicy. Looks an awful lot like the Yuki character from my last name. And apparently this, like, saddens him somehow. I don't know why that makes him sad.
Did it make him sad? I don't remember making him sad.
Well,
he does. He gets gloom.
A gloom sound effect. And Megumi says, don't get depressed, Soma. And I guess because, like, she just said, made spiciness seem bad.
And it almost seemed, like, addicting and dangerous, I guess. Right. And that's why he's like, oh, man.
I don't like my name being associated with something bad. I guess. So, Japanese pun jokes are very confusing to me sometimes. So someone's like, oh, wow, you know, this is way more than I thought it, complicated than I thought it was, basically. And then Arina says, but, you know, not all Chinese cooking is Sichuan. Remember, I told you the other day, there are many different styles of cooking native to China. Sichuan is but one of 8 major branches of Chinese cuisine, and each has its own story, storied history, and unique cooking traditions. And so then someone goes, oh, you know, come to think of it, there was something that my dad told me once. And he just has a little private flashback, and then he says, oh, hey, Tadakoro, can you taste one more thing for me? And maybe he's like, is it going to be something spicy again? No. Nah.
Okay.
It's a ball of glass. It's one of my experiments. It's like, it's an experiment. You're serving me trash. Dangerous trash. No.
Chinese dish.
I'm a genius. I'm a savant in my time.
I've done peanut butter and squid, now honey and glass.
There's barely any honey in it. It's in the center. You gotta bite your way into it.
Okay. We cut away to Kuga's preparations. He has set up what is basically like fucking Acropolis-sized booth. And like, oh my god, it's so huge. And then someone comes up with a little fucking card right across from it. Oh god. And so, you know, people from the Chinese booth says, oh, he's going to challenge our booth with that dinky little god. And Kuga says, are you really going to challenge me with that? And he's like, yeah, sure I am. And he says, this little cart here just hit me as a great idea. For some reason, it gives me the feeling that I might be able to cook up something really, really interesting with it. And Kuga spots a pot on the cart and immediately goes, is he? Indicating that he may have caught on to whatever the hell someone's planning to do. So I imagine we're not actually very far away from seeing the festival itself. So, yeah.
Which works for me. I think, you know, nothing against what we're getting here, but I'm kind of excited to... Or I guess maybe not excited. I just kind of want to see where this is going. The thing that has me very curious is it only looks like he has, like, 3 pots, and wasn't it like they had to serve, like, 20,000 people or something like that?
Well, yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's got to be prepared somewhere else and brought to him. Maybe Megumi's got to be helping him out getting another cart ready, just getting the ingredients ready, and then bring that later.
And I heard this from the Shonen Jump podcast, so I'll give credit to them before I sound like I'm, like, going to be putting in a cool theory. Blue was the editor-in-chief there, actually, put a suggestion that Soma might actually be making a food that acts as a like a relief to spicy food.
Which would make perfect sense because he is working alongside of Megumi, who her cooking has actually focused on that.
He could literally, he doesn't need to serve 20,000 customers or whatever, he just needs to serve everyone that this guy does.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like, hey, get your free, you know, milk-based dish in order to, you know, have the spiciness, you know.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of cheating. So I don't know if he would actually do that, but that the same thought actually did occur to me when I first read this. So.
I think it's perfect, because it's a dish that perfectly encaptures Soma. You're like, wow, what a douchey move. Just like Soma. Like, what a fucking, like, ah, you cocky fuck. But you did it. I can't blame you. You did it.
Alright, let's move on to My Hero Academia.
Yes. Yes!
Number 47, Struggling. Let's see. So, important plot elements going on, as All Might has met up with... I don't even know if we've seen this guy before. Basically, the guy, I guess he's at the at police headquarters or something. That must be it. And he says, yeah, we've been performing DNA... We want to perform a DNA analysis on Nomu. And there's something that we thought you had to know, because we are on the ringleader's trail. We've been trying all sorts of tests since then. It's not just that he can't speak, he doesn't react to anything. There's not a thought in his head. So we ran a DNA test to find out what we could about his origins. Turns out he is a petty criminal, assault, extortion, whole rap sheet. And we also learned that he's got the DNA of at least 4 completely different people in him. So, always like, what the hell does that mean? I mean, his whole body's been altered by drugs and chemicals. It's like he's been bioengineered just so he can tolerate multiple quirks, so can he even still be considered human anymore. And so basically that says, yeah, that's why he has low brain activities, because he is essentially a Frankenstein monster. And the conclusion that he reaches is, you know, being able to take in additional DNA wouldn't result in extra quirks unless there were some other transference factor at play. One for All has made you quite familiar with that concept. It could be a quirk that bestows quirks. So that's kind of a big deal. But we cut away after that point to catch up with Deku and his new teacher, who was previously All Might's teacher, who finished up the last chapter revealing that he was actually quite quick and was wiser than he was initially letting on and stuff.
You know what his name is, Nick?
I don't recall, actually.
Gran Torino!
Right, of course. How could I forget? We made all the Gran Torino jokes last time, yeah.
What if there's some other 6-year-old movie we could spoil this week?
Hey guys, in Avatar, the aliens win.
Oh wow. I don't know why my mind's preconditioned to think that aliens are automatically the bad guys in every movie they're in, so it's like, holy shit, the aliens win, the bad guys win, they conquer Earth. Not since Mars Attacks has this happened. I didn't watch the last 20 minutes of that movie. I just assumed the aliens stay in power. I stopped after they killed the black guy.
And we're just like, well, that's enough of this.
I was rooting for him to win. I was like, I'm done with this now. You've killed Jack Nicholson and the black guy I like.
Are you talking about the black guy, the, like...
I don't think they actually killed him.
No,
they
he
beat
wins.
Him.
He wins.
No, they defeat him and they lay him out in, like, the airport tarmac.
Well, the scene at the end, he actually shows back up and he, like, steps on one of their skulls and is just like, yeah, I'm fine.
Yeah, I think he does come back. Nick, this is like a 13-year-old movie. I'm going off a lot of old memories on this. I just know I was really sad when they beat him up and they, like, laid him out for all the plain people to see. And they did kill Jack Nicholson. Spoilers.
So Deku puts on his costume because Gran Torino has challenged him to a fight. So, you know, Deku's like, look, I'm still not very good at controlling this power, you know, maybe we should actually go into a wide open space instead of, you know, your kitchen, because if I got careless and used 100%, I mean, I feel like I could kill you, and Gran Torino's like, come on, wuss, and just bounces behind him and kicks him in the back. So he's like, come on, you go, give me a demonstration of your power, you know. It seems you couldn't perceive my true power before. To choose this little wet blanket as the 9th successor, All Might's a novice among novices. And he starts to mock Deku, and it's just bounced around everywhere, keeps on hitting him from behind after bouncing behind him. And so Deku eventually is like, okay, I gotta, you know, get the One For All power ready. I have to will it not to break my arm. And he's hit me twice in the back now, so if he comes in again, I'll just, you know, get him there. Sure enough, Gran Torino swoops in from the back. Deku ducks and whirls around, and he prepares to counterattack, and Gran Torino's like, oh, trying to analyze and predict, huh? And he just basically sidesteps Deku's smash attempt and takes him down. And he says, all right, you're stiff, your awareness is a mess, and basically I could kill you right now if I wanted to. He says, the way that I saw the way you fought in the cavalry battle, I saw the way you fought in the tournament, I was sure you'd already figured it out based on that. The respect you have for All Might, that sense of responsibility, their shackles holding you back. You keep on saying to yourself, I have to get stronger quickly. It's true, time is not on your side, nor your enemies, and they won't wait for you to get stronger. You're thinking of One For All as too unique a thing. And Deku says, so what should I do? And he says, well, figure it out yourself. I'm going to go get food. Bye.
Peace.
Clean up this mess. It's kind of a weird thing where you're just like, he just nudges Deku in the right direction, but you're just like, you've got this problem. Figure it out. Bye.
You got this later. At the end, when Deku figures out that it's like, oh man, that guy was so smart. He's like, oh, thank God he figured something else, because I was fucking clueless on that.
So then we cut over to where Ida is in Hosu City, where he took up his internship, basically. Have we seen Ida in this full suit before, with the helmet and everything?
I think we've seen parts of it, but I was going to say this is a fucking sweet-ass costume.
It's an awesome. He looks like a fucking Transformer, basically. So he is patrolling town, it seems, or I guess just being introduced by his teacher hero guy. And he's like, you know, Hosu's been kind of in a panic lately, so I'm glad that you're here to help out. It's nice to have Ingenium's little brother with me. And so, Ida, of course, thinking to himself, you know, the hero killer, a phantom that even modern law enforcement hasn't been able to catch. It may all be in vain, but I can't help but want to pursue him, because I can never forgive him. There's no way this ends well, is there?
No, probably not. No. But it has me excited for what happens.
Yeah. So, then we cut to the hero killer, who has been approached by...
Nick, he has no nose!
Yeah, that's creepy. I think that he might not have an upper face at all, actually. He has been approached by some of the villains who invaded the Academy way back, I don't know, like 30 chapters, 40 chapters ago. I forget their names, but, you know, there is Hand on Face Guy and Darkness Head Dude there.
Face Guy. It's actually a very descriptive way of getting them, because you don't forget that once you see it.
So, he says, like, oh, so...
Just wait a couple seconds for Annalise to pipe in with their names.
He says, ah, so you want me to join your gang, do you? Well, what do you want to do? And, so, Hand on Face Guy says, we want to kill All Might eventually, but I also want to destroy everything I don't like. Like this little brat, for instance, and holds up a picture of Deku. I should remember the hero killer's name, because they've given it before. Recently. Fuck, what is his name?
Someone's saying Krillin, but I don't know if that's a joke
or not. It's not Krillin. Krillin?
I feel like you'd have to pick a better name. Like, you'd be like, I guess that name kind of had a bit of connotation to it.
No one gives me any respect for being the strongest hero.
Stain, that's right, Stain.
Strongest human one. Stain, of course. Yeah. So Stain says, you know, I can't believe that you guys actually had my interest for a second. You guys are the type that I hate the most. Is this why I team up with some temper tantrum throwing child? Bloodlust without conviction is meaningless. Which may indicate that there is a little bit more to him than just, you know, hero...
Oh, Nick, by the way, Annalise says the hand on face guy is Shigaraki.
No, let's go with hand on face guy.
The fog head guy is Black Mist.
Black Mist is fine.
But you like hand on face guy instead of Shigaraki.
Hand on face guy. We're keeping that one. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah. So, Tomura Shigaraki, what the hell? Tomura Shigaraki knows nothing but the impulse to destroy. I thought inviting this man here might help him to grow, but it appears I was wrong. Okay, so Black Mist is thinking to himself, Shigaraki knows nothing but the impulse to destroy, so I thought inviting this man here might help him to grow, but it appears I was wrong. And he says to a monitor where their master is watching everything from, like, Sensei, shouldn't I stop him? As Stain seemingly, I guess, vanishes. I think that's what's supposed to be happening in the past. He leaves.
He's like, fuck this. He's like, fuck this shit, yo.
Well, the only sound effect though is shing, but there is like darkness around him, so I imagine he's like fading into the shadows or something. But their master says there is no sense in simply telling someone an answer. He must be taught to reach those conclusions himself. We must help him mature. That's what education really means. And wouldn't you know it, that is exactly what's going on with Deku back at his place, as he contemplates what Gran Torino told him, and he thinks, okay, you know, I've been thinking of One for All as more unique than it actually is, so maybe that's why my moves are so stiff. What does stiff mean in the first place? Well, I guess the opposite would be this. I should be loose? And he's like, oh, I was thinking of it as a super secret last resort trump card, but really, quirks are just extensions of our bodies. I have to use One for All more evenly. I can't believe I never figured that out. I can't believe I never figured it out either, honestly.
I wanted, like, the end of this, like, he's having this long explanation about, like, his thought process, and at the end of it, he's like, I'm not really grasping how to make spicy dishes. What I need to do is make a dish that's signature for myself. Like, he just comes to the conclusion from Food Wars.
So meanwhile, over at Shokugeki no Soba, Soba just, like, puts on a mask and punches Kuga in the face really fucking hard.
He's like, I just need to use my strength on an offensive one. Bam! You can't cook if you're knocked out, son! Thanks, Alice! She's like, I didn't tell you to do this.
Oh, God. So, Gran Torino apparently didn't go and get some food, or maybe he already did and just came back really quickly. He's been waiting outside of the room, listening to Deku talk to himself, and instead of reaching the conclusion of, this kid might be insane if he's just talking to nobody, he's like, a kid really knows how to think, so maybe you did pick a good one after all, Toshinori. All Might.
We learned All Might's name now.
Toshinori.
Yeah. It's a big deal. We haven't known it before, I think.
He's still gonna be All Might, and even if...
Yeah. Well, it's a very Japanese name for a dude whose, like, powers are, like, Detroit Punch and fucking Baltimore Punch.
Yeah, all that. These United States names. Maybe he just, like, learned those from a previous holder.
He has to be a reverse weeaboo. Like, he's just like, I love Americans. Fucking, they're awesome.
Yeah, let's not assume a deeper meaning to all this stuff. Come on. Naruto.
Yes.
Seventh Hokage and the Scarlet Spring.
I'm starting to wonder, Nick, if there's ever going to be a Scarlet Spring.
I think that's supposed to be a metaphor, Chris.
Oh, for what?
I am waiting for the wound-up piece of metal colored red to show up. Yeah. Anyway, Chapter 700 plus 8, the real thing. Last time, Sarada found out she is not actually Sakura and Sasuke's daughter. She is actually Karin's daughter, seemingly. Although we threw around the idea that maybe she is a clone of some sort. And she's really upset. Her Sharingan's gotten activated. She's crying. She has accused Naruto and everyone in Konoha of lying to her about her background and stuff. And so she reiterates this to herself in her mind when, you know, Naruto's like, oh, you know, you're so similar to him and so on and so forth. And Sarada just says, you know, I don't want to look like that jerk as in Sasuke at all. You know, I don't care if you are trying to compliment me when you say that, so I don't want to be like him. And Naruto says, okay, well, what are you going to do now? And so I was like, well, I'm going to keep traveling on my own, so, you know, just leave me alone. I'm never going to return to Konoha again. So thanks for everything. Bye. And Naruto grabs her arm to prevent her from leaving. And he said, okay, I overheard your conversation with Suigetsu just now. So I know what's going on. And you say that I've got nothing to do with this, but you're wrong. And so I was like, no, you heard it, then you know. You don't have anything to do with me. And Naruto says, no, all the people in Konoha are like family to me. And, you know, the third Hokage used to say that often, too. And so it says, you're just using that as an excuse. You know, it's just something you can say basically to win an argument. That's essentially what he's doing, isn't it?
Yeah, he's just like, look, you know.
It makes me sound cool if I do that, so you have to listen to me. But, you know, Soraya's like, look, Dad doesn't even recognize me. Mom's been lying to me the whole time, and we're not related by blood, so I don't have a real family, and you're not me, you know, so you don't know who I am, you're not my
family. You don't know me? God. Yeah. Kishimoto has captured the teenage girl mind so well.
Yeah. I mean, yes.
Yeah. I think I said it a couple times. You don't understand me.
So Naruto flashes back to fucking chapter one. Look, Chris, it's stuff about how important Iruka is to him.
It actually was super cool we got this. I think, and this is just a personal thing, I'm not like making a complaint about this. I think I would have been maybe a little bit nicer if he hadn't done the whole, like, here was every line from it. Instead, he just, like, thought of Iruka, and you could, like, visualize, like, what that what that impact meant to him. But actually spelling it out's fine, too, you know. It's a shonen-on. She can't actually trust that they'll remember this character and what he actually meant to him. But it is super cool that he's like, yeah, no, I mean, I had family. My only family for a while was a guy I had no blood relation to at all. Yeah. That is, like, a really powerful impact. I'm glad Iruka matters, because that is one of the most vital characters to Naruto's life.
And to understanding what Sarada's going through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's the line that, you know, he said to Sasuke, you know, I don't know a thing about having brothers or real parents, but whenever I'm with Master Iruka, I kind of get the picture. I imagine what having a pause like. Ah!
But then I've actually met my real dad later on.
Well, and then extending that to Sasuke and thus, you know, Sarada, but, you know, and when I'm with you, I imagine that's what it's like to have a brother. Mm-hmm. Showing that also he feels a deep familial connection specifically to Sarada because of his bonds with Sasuke. So, yeah, that's good stuff.
And just that he's undergone a lot of the same shit she has in regards to a relationship with Sasuke. You know, he's not his kid, but he wanted to have a familial relationship with Sasuke, and Sasuke was
Even
a douchier person than he is now, so.
Yeah. So Naruto says, is that the extent of your bonds with your mother and father? Bonds aren't just about history or blood. There are stronger links than that. Nakama! Yeah, anyway. So Sarada says, oh yeah, like what? And he says, love. And that's really all you need.
Yeah.
Right, John Lennon?
Yeah. It's absurd. Like, it's essentially, he's like, look, not only is love all you need, I just summed up the entirety of Lost 2. You don't even have to watch it now. Love, that's what... You don't have to see Interstellar either. Love is the only thing that... I'm saving you time. Love is going to be the answer to a lot of things.
Yeah. So, Sarada has a flashback to when she was a little girl, and Sakura said, you know, look, your dad's still out, away from home. He's got very important work to do. And then another scene where Sarada was homesick, and Sakura waited by her bedside for her to get better while caring for her. Then as she was growing up, you know, continued to ask the question, you know, when is he going to come back? Does he not care about us? No, of course he cares about us. Well, why isn't he back here then? You know, a child not understanding it type of thing. And so Sakura just said, look, one day you're going to understand, but you just won't now. And then there's a really awkward moment where Sarada says, hey, have you ever kissed Dad? And Sakura goes, huh? And she thinks to herself, and then she kind of makes this thoughtful expression, and I'm just like, is she thinking of the time they had sex?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think everyone goes to that place, because she even says, like, I just remembered something better.
Oh, you're such a mom.
Yeah, like, Sarada goes there, and I'm like, I think everyone went there when she's like, Oh, that's going to get me going. Hold on, I'm taking this zucchini into my bedroom. I'm going to be back in 20 minutes.
Jeez, Mom, you're such a perfect... No, not that! I gotta prepare dinner.
No, I've got a recipe I gotta check.
In my room.
Yeah. In my vagina. Anyway, you go to bed.
So, and yeah, you're just like, I just remember something even better. Because, geez, my, you're such a pervert. No, not that. Okay, then what were you thinking of? And Sakura taps Soraya on the forehead.
She's like, that time Sasuke plopped me in the ass. She's like, that's what I meant, Mom! Like, oh. Thought she meant cuddling. Anyway.
So she taps Sarada on the forehead, the same way Sasuke tapped her on the forehead, the same way that Itachi tapped him on the forehead. And it's like, God, the meaning of this expression changes every time we see it. Stop doing it. And so Sakura just says, you'll understand what that happened once you meet your dad. And basically, this is a weird moment to end it on, but Sarada just remembers, hey, yeah, Mom did really care about me. And so she remembers that, and she starts to cry, and she's like, I really do... I want to help rescue her, and, you know, I guess, you know, but, I mean, it's like, it's not like nothing has changed, but she's still very important to me. And Naruto says, it doesn't matter whether she's a fake or your real parent, so long as you care to help her, that's real enough. Let's go rescue your mom. Oh, so good.
It is a very sweet chapter. I mean, almost everything from here is pretty forgettable.
It's just like, you know, who gives a shit?
These two moments here with Naruto recalling his own life and Sarada kind of remembering the relationship she actually does have with her mom. Very sweet stuff. I mean, it's what I kind of expected we were going to get out of this when it was, you know, a story of kids and their parents. But it's exactly what you want. It's very satisfying in that regard. And someone mentioned in the chat room here a little bit ago, just in regards to our talk with Aruka before, and I think we've passed by since then. JoJo Extreme mentioned that, I guess, in one of the sequel novels to Naruto, at Naruto's wedding, he actually invites Aruka to, like, walk him down the aisle as his father.
Aww.
So, that is very, very cool stuff there.
I didn't know that there were Naruto novels.
I didn't either.
It makes sense, but, you know. Okay. So, basically, they go and meet up with Sasuke, and Sasuke's like, where have you been?
I'm impatient and rude and a jerkbag.
Naruto, where have you been with my daughter? It's like, oh, you remembered she was your daughter. Okay.
Wait, that's... I thought the fat one was mine.
I am? I knew it!
I got a hot dad. No, you're not. It's not your dad. Your dad's back in town. He's the other fat person.
It's two fat... it's impossible.
There's two fat people in Konohan. They're related.
Oh, God. So... they're like, alright, we have to go and find Sasuke, rather, we have to go and find Sakura, and Orochimaru's like, she might be dead already, you know.
Get out of here.
And Sasuke's like, my wife's not that weak, which I guess confirms that they are married.
It does, Sasuke. Yes.
Yeah. So he's like, alright,
I want to be at that wedding. Like, if there was one wedding in manga to be a fucking fly on the wall on, it'd be that awkward shit, like, the entire time would be Sasuke, like, fucking tapping his foot, staring at his watch, like, come on, I want to be emo over there.
It's like Sakura standing right in front of him with her veil over her face, going, Sasuke, aren't you happy that we're getting married? He's like, no!
You may now kiss the bride. Oh, thank God, you fucking teleport your teeth away.
No, wait, Sasuke, are you forgetting something? He said may, not will.
Yeah, he gave me a choice. I did that forehead tap thing. That's always just as good.
What about our honeymoon? Actually, I already did it while you were asleep. It took me about 5 minutes. And so, yeah. Good luck raising my kid. Bye! Yeah.
I'll be back later. Maybe. Probably not. Bye.
If you're lucky.
Don't worry. I'll somehow come back during Christmas. And then he pops back in for a second. Maybe. Just leaves again.
Now raise my kid so they'll revive the Uchiha clan. Actually, no, because I could be emo about being the last member.
Bring my hereditary evil clan back.
So that they can go.
So another person will lose someone they love and turn into another Hitler.
That was why he was worried when Sarada showed back up. He just was worried that she was going to enact vengeance upon him instead of someone else.
He's like, oh god, you didn't lose a dog or anything, did you?
Oh, you're not crying tears of blood, so I assume you're not at that point yet.
Alright, I'm okay. Safe for a little bit.
Okay. So Sasuke's like, alright, I know the location where they've taken her, and I've got bullshit eye powers that we can use so that we can enter Kagura's time space. But it's gonna take a lot of chakra. and does something with, like, Susanoo and, like, argues with Naruto about, I don't fucking know.
It's actually kind of funny that they're both, like, arguing with each other, like, oh, yeah, you were sure kind of lazy back there. Like, oh, now your eye power? Like, they're fucking, like, old guys shitting on each other for being, like, a step behind and losing their prime. I thought that was kind of funny.
Okay. So then we cut over to Shin's little lair, and he's like, my goal is to eradicate all the peace-addled genes, to annihilate every genes that interferes with me, and you are one of them. As he gets up from the operating table, so, you know, thanks for saving my life with the operation. Gotta kill you now!
Yeah, but, hey, can you attach a new arm to me first?
Yeah, it's hard to fight with one arm. This was my wanking arm, man. It's gonna be really, like, tonight, you know? And so Sarka says, well, I was only wheedling information out of you because my husband wanted to know who you were and what you're plotting. Get it? Yeah, I get that, but why'd you do the surgery? Like, this literally could have all been solved. Just been like, no.
She might have done a fake surgery, though, Nick. Like, maybe, so, like, he, like, opens it up and he's just like,
he's like, ah, you thought that I saved your life by performing major heart surgery, but why don't you try checking that chest when you, like, pulls it open, like, fucking snakes pop out.
It's like a beer nuts thing. Like, ah! He just dies.
Oh, I know. It's
just a girly scream before he dies, and that's it.
Oh, God. Seriously, though, why the fuck did you help him, Sakura? Okay, so that's it for Naruto. I do want to briefly note Nisekoi, who are pulling yet another, we are totally going to progress this relationship thing. Check in next week where we will progress the relationship thing.
I almost laughed. I do want to note, I had to laugh when I got to the finale, and they were like, Yui, you might have to return home. And I was like,
oh no, not Yui!
We just did this twice! We just did, like, Chitoge, you're moving to America, and then right after that, Marika, you're probably dying. Now, she is still probably dying, but not as immediate.
Also, the whole Chitoge thing was a twofer, because Tsugumi was lumped in with that.
Yes.
So if we just get one where, like, Onodera's mom is just like, this area is unsuccessful for our candy shop business, we have to go somewhere else.
I want her to be like, Onodera.
Then we have all the love interests.
But Adair, we're secretly from the moon, and we need to return home to our family.
Lunadera. There we go. The thing that was going on was, like, Chitoge confessed a couple chapters ago she had a crush on someone, and Reku's like, oh, really? What's going on? And now he's just, like, imagining some guy, even though it's really him, that he's getting jealous of, and he's not sure why he's getting jealous, which insinuates that, you know, I return her feelings, so. And that's it. Before we move on to the one that everyone really cares about, fucking Yui having to move out after all those important things she has accomplished.
Like, be the downturn in every chapter involving the entire cast.
Like, seriously, like, with this many love interests, it's amazing that it took this long for one to show up and just, like, just fuck her and everything she's involved in. God. One Piece!
One Piece! With an awesome cover spread.
That is a sweet cover spread.
It's every character with the location they're supposedly based off of.
Really?
Yeah, Oda's revealed...
God, it's like, I would not have seen a whole bunch of these.
Yeah, Nami's American, Usopp's Brazilian.
That I see.
Chopper's... I think he's just supposed to be like... Inuit.
It's difficult to determine because there's Canada, but there's also Switzerland right there.
I think he's Canadian, that's right. He's supposed to be Canadian. At least that's what I think I heard, but
that's
there might
like be so nice.
Yeah. Sanji's France.
That I see.
Robin, I did not realize. I guess she's Indian. I guess that's what they're going
she
with.
She is, which I guess that fits in with the whole multi-armed thing.
Yeah. The only one here I was truly surprised by was Frankie is Chinese. I always thought he was...
Where did that come from?
I always thought he was supposed to be American as well, but I did forget that Nami's huge tits, good-looking, and obsessed with money is more American, I guess.
That's so amazing.
And Zoro is Germany.
That one I don't really... Well, I guess...
Drinking, fighting.
Thing. Yeah. And then Usopp Brazilian is just like... I believe you, I guess. I don't know enough about Brazilian culture to know that.
I can see it, yeah, I can see it. And then, obviously, Luffy is Japanese.
Is British. No!
Always making their poop. I can't tell you how many times I talked to Infamous Planet. He's like,
Hi there, Chris. I'm a Yorkshire pudding today. Oh, poop, fart joke, skull joke. Yo ho ho.
Yo ho ho ho.
Oh, I'm going to be over here and do 45 degrees. But I'm too young to know who Michael Jackson is, so I don't get the reference.
New boy. He doesn't know who Michael Jackson is?
He probably knows him only as, like, a pedophile. He's probably like, he did music, although he just wanked them little boys off. Hi. I'm learning a whole lot of things.
This planet is going to be so angry at you. There is going to be so... God.
Oh.
He was so mean to you in that part 3 of World Trigger, To My Heart and Back Door video version. I can't imagine what he's going to do next time he takes the chance.
He was even meaner when he did the World Trigger retrospective, where he did our thoughts and our
yeah, that was what I was thinking of. I got this back
at the end. It's just like,
where we all just go insane or die. I was appreciative of the ending he gave me, though. If you haven't seen that, go check out Infamous Planet's recap of the first 19 or 20 chapters of World Trigger that we did in Weekend Manga Recap, where we were just constantly shitting on it until eventually we hit around chapter 20 and we were just like, actually, this was pretty okay. And then from there on, we just started filleting it constantly.
Yeah.
It's a great recap of the early days and how amazingly we turned around on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could pull out a lot of good quotes from that, where a lot of us are like, fucking... If this survives, the manga
has no case.
Oh great, another bitchy character's mad. Who gives a fuck?
Although, going back, still stand by those complaints I had.
I still, you know what, honestly, even going back, I was still like, you know, at the time, I think a lot of these were actually pretty valid.
Yeah. Anyway, that's not going into the world.
Anyway.
One Piece. Another good chapter in One Piece. Chapter 790, Heaven and Earth. Luffy has finally returned in order to fight Doflamingo. Everyone is celebrating. People are crying. Rebecca's sword is broken. Maybe that's why she's crying. I don't know. Maybe she's not actually happy to see them. Maybe she's like, Lucy, you broke my sword. How could you?
You fuck.
I don't care if you saved me from having to kill my aunt. Fuck you.
This was a nice sword.
What do you gotta do next? Break my chainmail bikini?
He's like, there's nothing to break. Not without getting standards and practices involved.
Yeah. Anyway, so Doflamingo is unimpressed, basically. He's just like, oh, what an entrance. But at best, your hockey just barely returned to you. It's all you can do to stand, isn't it? And so he immediately attacks Luffy with a whole bunch of strings and actually sends him flying pretty well. Knocks him through the air. And Rebecca almost gets just impaled on a whole bunch of stuff. But fortunately, Law is there to save the day again, switches her place with the rock so that she is out of the line of fire, and so Luffy can continue to fight with Doflamingo without having to worry about her. At which point, Doflamingo turns everything into strings. Just everything.
Yeah. That's some pretty... All right. This is further complicating things should anyone on my fucking One Piece forum want an awakened devil fruit. I'm like, all right, well, hold on, because you can do some pretty crazy shit with that, apparently.
That's an awesome name, by the way, Everwhite. It's just a cool-sounding name. Gyatz indicates the entire town has been turned to strings, which I am curious as to how far that extends. It's obviously not the entire kingdom, but that's a lot of buildings, basically.
It's not actually all that much, because you've actually seen a couple panels away from that as an outside shot, and you can still see a lot of buildings and such. I think he probably turned, like... maybe, like, a couple blocks into it. Because also, the finale has him destroying the town, so...
Right. He has several skyscraper-sized strings that he is attacking Luffy with, and he's bombarding him with them and stuff, and Luffy's barely hanging on. And it seems that some of them actually penetrate his armament haki, which he uses to protect himself. So... Doflamingo's like, oh, have you really restored all your haki? And it's just throwing him against the wall. Luffy is really up against the ropes. And when Doflamingo's assault ends, Luffy has been taken control of with his puppetry powers. And so he's just staggering back towards Doflamingo against his own will while he is remembering training with Rayleigh during the time skip. where he was like, oh, so what happened to your special Kong gun, huh? And Luffy's like, well, there was an even bigger one this time, and the move didn't work. And so Larry said, well, in that case, you better think of a different method. The problem with Gear 4 is that it places too much strain on your body. So, Luffy is just like, well, fuck your stupid strings, and fuck your birdcage, and fuck everything. Fuck you. Oh, he doesn't say that, but you know. So.
Fuck your face.
You know, Doflamingo says, if only everyone had behaved themselves and danced on my strings inside the cage, I wouldn't have had to slaughter them all. And Luffy says, oh, your cage, dance, enough of this! And he goes into Gear 4, rips out of Doflamingo's strings, which shucks the fuck out of him. And Luffy goes straight up into the air. Doflamingo says, oh, come on, how long are you going to last with what little stamina you have left? And anyway, you've got guts to challenge me to a mid-air battle, so this is the point where you show me your one-hit KO! And follows after Luffy, ton of strings following after him, charging into the air. Luffy rears a fist back, and he delivers a speech. And the speech goes, you try to trap everything within your own hands so that you can control everyone, and it's suffocating me! And Doflamingo says, all right, well then blame your blood, because you were born to be human refuse and helpless puppets. So, fuck you guys, basically. So Luffy says, I'm going to kick your butt and be free. Which, that's a very PG line, isn't it?
I'm going to whack your behind.
Yeah. So Luffy rears back, and then he starts to exhale into one of his arms, or he bites his arm and starts to basically inflate it like he does with Gear 3rd. So it seems as though basically he has combined Gears 4 and 3 in order to create a gigantic fucking fist.
King Kong Cannon.
Doflamingo tries to counter it with a whole bunch of his strings, along with a web shield, basically, and Luffy just punches through everything. He punches through the shield, he punches through the strings, he punches through Doflamingo. Doflamingo is punched through the entire fucking world, basically. Seemingly the entire kingdom collapses in on him under the impact of it, unless, I guess, maybe they're just there because everything was being pressed together under the birdcage. I'm not sure. And, you know, Law just looks on all this, and he remembers Corazon. You know, he remembers that Corazon told him, you know, in one area, the people of the D are known as the enemies of the gods. And, seemingly, Luffy has defeated one of those gods, because Doflamingo's shattered sunglasses fall to the ground. So, what do you think of this, Chris?
Oh, this was awesome. This was absolutely fantastic. This was that climax. There have been several weeks now where I may have mentioned something like, oh, you know, this is cool, but it's really going to be worth it when we get to the, you know, this is build-up, but it really comes to where we get the payoff. Well, this is that payoff. This is the climax of the Dressrosa arc. It is immensely satisfying. It is an awesome chapter. You know, there are some bad points to it. I didn't quite get Raleigh's speech, like what it implied. I thought it almost seemed to be suggesting that Gear 4 wouldn't be the answer.
Yeah.
But I guess it was. He's like, yeah, you just need something bigger than Gear 4. I don't know. That maybe it might even be foreshadowing to maybe something beyond it. I don't really know that for certain, but
that would be nice.
The way it happened, though, is so satisfying. Going into the air, throwing this, you know, King Kong punch, you know, Doflamingo has this big final attack, you know, the two of them clashing. It ties it all together with that speech where you see all the different angles, all the factions of Dressrosa, the gladiators, the toys, the Tantata, all the people who have been controlled and oppressed over this, you know, Riku and Bellamy. It shows all of them to give you that, and it doesn't, you know, force it down your throat. It just flashes them so you know, you get all of it encapsulated at one final moment before Luffy smashes into the ground in that satisfying manner. It's been a really long time since we've had something like this. The last closest one I can really think of would be Lucci, way back, you know, in Water 7. Because even as, you know, bad as Caesar or Hody were, neither of them had the same kind of weight and length behind their crimes that this was. This was a long arc. So finally getting that moment where Luffy beats the shit out of him, slams him into the city. It has a lot of time and a lot of savoring that the moment's kind of had to really create something awesome. So I was a huge fan of it, especially when it ends with Doflamingo being, like, knocked into the abyss. It reminded me a lot of how Luffy beat Crocodile, where he launched himself into the air, just launched him through the city, just, you know, the inverse.
Okay. Well, yeah, I thought it was a very satisfying climax to this arc. I can understand if some people are like, oh, he just does Gear Third, basically, again, and are kind of disappointed in it in that respect, but it's not really about, you know, the technique so much as it is about Luffy beat Doflamingo. So, yeah.
And it's not as though necessarily, like, it's not like it was like, oh, I did a stronger energy attack. Like, it still is a mechanical reason as to why this move would be stronger than, you know, the last one.
Okay.
Do you think Doflamingo has eyes, Nick?
What's that?
Do you think Doflamingo has eyes? Like, that his last Superboy will see eyes? Like, I like to think he has, like, little tiny beady eyes, and that's, like, why he hides them.
God. Toriko, Gourmet 328, Civilization's Roof. This chapter actually focuses, I was kind of surprised, on Komatsu and Gigi's group with all the various different chefs in it as they go through the ocean to find their part of the menu. And, you know, they travel through some stuff, and at one point we get this bit of stuff focusing on Chiyo's character where she reflects on, you know, her deceased son, and there's a line where she says, you know, he was always sickly, and when he was finally discharged when he was 12, suddenly he just took a turn for the worse, and so my one regret is I was never able to feed him my home-cooked food. It's like, aww, that's pretty bad. Yeah. So, you know, basically, she's gone on this journey because, you know, she can find the back channel and potentially communicate with him again. And, you know, she's like, I want to cook for my son, and I want us to enjoy a meal together. Like, that's nice. Where have you been, by the way? So everyone's like, okay, yeah, let's go. Let's go get another. And they're beset upon by this giant coral golem thing. And they're like, oh, giant capture levels everywhere in the ocean. Oh, hey, look, we found what we're looking for. The Civilization's Roof. It's a giant shell, and the city is inside, and it's, like, fucking the size of the United States, and it's opening up. Let's go inside. Yay, we made it! And we're inside, and here is this giant undersea gourmet city Blue Grill, which has this nice, like, fucking welcome arch in it, too. How do you have that any visitors to this place? Seriously. That's basically all I got for that.
I think it's cool that we get some, you know, we get a little bit more from Chiyo. You know, we knew her story before this. She, you know, started learning the dark arts so she could revive her son. Now she knows there's another way she could kind of get that chance to at least share a meal with them. I like that we got that. And then it was followed up by being, you know, Chin's like, all of us here have that similar motivation. You know, all of us are here because we recognize we may die, but we all have a will that can't be broken. And like, oh, okay, presumably all of the characters here have some kind of reason for being here. We probably won't find out what many of those are, but it's cool that they all have that conviction. Mm-hmm. There's like 7 of them that I guess are gourmet hunters, and I'm just like, I know we ain't finding shit about you guys. You guys might as well be wearing red shirts or shirts that say we don't fucking matter, because
unless you're Zonke, then you'll just make it through everything okay.
Yeah, because you're wacky. But, no, I mean, I liked it to that regard. It's also interesting that of the, you know, 5 different foods they're going after, based off this, it looks like we're going to follow Komatsu's first. I mean, I guess it makes sense since he has the biggest group, but, yeah.
We'll see how it goes. All right, World Trigger, Chapter 106, Masataka Ninomiya. Last time, Ninomiya,
somewhere out there you can hear Annalisa fucking scream.
Last time we left off with Ninomiya unexpectedly coming to speak with Chika and Osamu at Tamakoma, and bringing up, you guys know who Rinji Amatori is. And Chika says, he's... Oh god, who is he?
He's a hunky beefcake? Quiet beefcake?
No, that's That's Karasuma, unless you're like...
Gyoza. No, that's Scruffy Hottie.
Yeah. All right, you're right.
Quiet Beefcake, isn't that...
Kyosuke, right?
That's that's his other name. Kyosuke Karasuma. No, isn't Renji the Quiet Beefcake?
Not Renji, no.
Not Renji, but isn't his name Renji?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're correct.
So that's when I heard, like, Renji. I was like, Quiet Beefcake? Oh, God, what has he done? And I was like, oh, Renji. Never mind, it's different.
It's like, no, that's your instructor in this, unless you've got some sort of weird thing.
Or Reiji. Yeah. Maybe it's Reiji.
It is Reiji, yeah.
Okay.
Still very close. So they're like, yeah, you know, Jigga says, yeah, it's my brother. And Osama says, and he used to be my tutor. What are you bringing up about him? And then Nidamiya produces a picture with of a woman, and he's like, do you know who this is? And they're like, no, never seen her. And you know, Nidamiya says, are you sure? Look closely. She's a dull woman with a fake smile always plastered on her face, which right off the bat indicates that he kind of knows her, although that is definitely cemented or later on. Basically, he says that she's suspected of a major breach of code when she supplied triggers to civilians and then disappeared along with them. The senior officials conclude that they went through a gate to the other side. And so, you know, Osama and Chika, of course, are shocked by this. And basically, you know, he says, look, no other agents disappeared that day, which means that at least three outside collaborators with Tryon left with her that day. To supply triggers to civilians is the highest level infraction and warrants the use of the memory eraser. HQ immediately sent agents to pursue and apprehend them, but they were already gone. I've been investigating these collaborators, and Rinji Amatori is one of the suspects. So Osamu, you know, flashes back to, you know, Rinji's fate. Basically, little scenes from that whole flashback chapter that was in the first person that was so cool. And he's like, oh yeah, he was there in a black suit at Chica's house that day. And so Yuma says, so, well, all right, well, if he is one of the collaborators, what are you going to do? And Inumiya says, well, nothing, because there's no way to capture them now. So, yeah. And Osama says, okay, well then, why are you actually investigating this? And Inumiya clarifies that the woman that was in the picture is Mirai Hatohara, who was the sniper on his squad before. And so HQ thinks that she's the ringleader of the squad, and he thinks that, nah, you know, she could have never come up with something like this. There must have been a mastermind who put her up to it, and I want to know who it is. And so that's why he suspects Rinji Amatori. And Chika actually chimes in and says, I think that would be him. I think that he would be able to do something like that. And Osamu also confesses that Rinji told him a bit about the plot, you know, showed him the border trigger he had, said that they were going to go beyond the gate with collaborators. And he says, I also remember the location of the gate that Rinji had predicted, so it should match where they disappeared. So they basically are fully cooperative with him, and then eventually Nidamiya says, okay, well, thanks. I'm sorry to have bothered you. And so Osama says, well, how far along is this investigation going? And Nidamiya is like, there's no point in telling you. And so I was like, one of the reasons why we made this team is to look for him, so we would like any information connected to him. And so Nidamiya says, well, what are you going to do with the information? So I was like, what do you mean?
Cry.
Go ahead.
He's just like this. I'm like, what are you gonna do with it? He's like, cry.
And Inumiya just says, you know, at your level, you're not gonna be chosen for the away team. So, what are you gonna do with information you can't use? Go to the other side, like Katahara. If you seriously want to look for Rinji Amatori, put him, gesturing to Yuma, on a different A rank team. That's the wisest choice to get one of you to the neighborhood using proper procedures. So Osamu looks kind of pissed off, and then he says, if we get chosen for the away team, will you tell us the information you have? And Inumiya says, we'll talk after you've been chosen. So then, we find out that Inumiya is really fucking awesome at his job, from Reiji, who explains that they are only B rank because they were demoted for Hatohara's actions, which is why they're the top ranked B rank team. So, y'all be fucked right now.
You guys are gonna be screwed.
You guys are losing this one. So Brady says that he actually knows a lot about this case because they are sibling pupils. I'm not sure exactly who he's referring to in that. Maybe Hadahara, maybe Nina Mia. I'm not sure. Yeah. But he says that only the senior officials, Azuma, Nina Mia squad, and himself, and then Kazama squad, who were sent after Hadahara, know about it. So don't go telling this to anyone else.
Azusama's like on Facebook. Guys, guess what I just... Oh, so how about that Mark Maron podcast where Obama dropped the N-word? That was pretty cray-cray, right? By the way, border agents.
So Chika is kind of optimistic about stuff. He's like, you know, we've got a clue about my brother's whereabouts. So we're making progress. Yay. And so Yuma's like, yeah, now all I have to do is get picked for the away team. Never mind if Nina Mia will give us the information. Osamu, of course, looks worried. And so later on, he contacts Karasuma. And he's like, I've got a favor. Can you give me, you know, more advanced shooter lessons and stuff? So Karasuma says, okay, look, you know, I know that you're kind of worried about your own abilities and stuff like that, but you're not at the level where you can use advanced techniques yet. You know, if you try and just learn them before you're ready, you're going to want to use the tricks of Ali that you'll lose your discretion and flexibility. So I don't know about this. And Osamu just says, he doesn't say anything. He just, you know, Karasuma was like, look, you won the matches and you did it because you didn't get into a poorly planned fight and you focused on playing to your strengths. And Osamu's just like, yeah, I know, but so Karasuma was like, all right.
Rumble.
Well, he says, but I will go ahead and ask the pros I'm friends with to help you out. Because if you're going to learn from anyone, you should learn from the experts. Which apparently means Arashiyama and... I don't even recognize the other guys there.
It's Arashiyama and the... We just met this guy. I don't remember his name, though. I think it's only supposed to be the two. Arashiyama and the other one is the guy who we met talking to... Nanami, I think. I actually probably mistaken it. There are a lot of characters that won't really look the same, but I think he's the guy who they revealed as the number one shooter and he was talking in Nanami.
Right. Was it Miwa? I think. No, that wasn't it.
I don't know. I'm waiting.
We're gonna have people be angry at us for not knowing this.
Tokita?
Sorry.
I was waiting for at least to post something that... Takeda? Takeda?
Tokieda. Anyway...
Is that the same as Izumi? Because now a lot of people are saying Izumi.
You're going to have two names. Anyway,
that's going to have two. No, I do want to actually comment on this, because one thing I really liked about this was Nanami in this chapter. Because I like that in this series, the antagonists are actually just very reasonable people. Like, you know, we're looking at this like, what an asshole. But if you actually look at it, you're like, no, this guy makes like 100% sense. And what he's, you know, going through, he's like, look, if you want to save your friend, you should just put him on a different team. Because then he can go out there and actually rescue them. Like, and he's not doing it in, like, a shitty way. Like, he's not, like, pooping all over Osamu during this. He's just very bluntly being like, you're not good enough to make A rank. You know, you're just not. You know, it's just a fact of the matter. It's not that he's wrong. It's the way he's approaching, or the way he's saying it. That makes him dislikable. And I think that makes him more interesting. You know, you could just put a douchey person as the antagonist for this, you know, someone. You could have him sword punch a child in the face, or you could put something that's a bit more interesting out there, and I really appreciate that.
Well, like, the most, like, unreasonable member of Border that we've really seen so far is Miwa, who's got the whole thing where it just, like, he just hates all neighbors.
Yeah.
But, it's tied into, you know, he experienced a loss, so that's why. So.
Yeah. So I really like it. I'm glad that he's, you know, a bit more interesting than just, you know, a super jerk, and that we're getting antagonists. Even, you know, the other character, like, outside of Inodora, has there really ever been, like, an evil person in this series?
Not that
I guess Mira, maybe a little bit.
Well, we don't know enough about the... I mean, aside from Husei and Inodora... We don't really know enough about the other people from Afto Krator to really, I think, come to that conclusion.
Yeah, but I mean, even in the little bit we saw of, what's his name? Ranadin? The egg guy. The dude with the fucking Animal Planet egg. That dude, we didn't get the impression from he's a super asshole.
Animal
demon.
Planet egg!
I don't remember his name! I didn't get the impression he's a villain. You know, like a super bad dude. Hyrene. That's it. I was getting kind of close, I think. But anyways, I did.
Oh, God.
Good chapter this week.
That's kind of do it.
Also, if Hashirama is showing up, that means Kitor has a pretty good chance of showing up, Nick, and my ship may get closer.
Yeah. Can you imagine? And it was like, oh, hey, Osamu, here, ready for your training? Yes, yes, I am. And, like, Kitor passed by. It's like, oh, hello, Kitor. Hey, bitch, tits, kicks him in the nuts.
Kicks him. And he just starts crying, and in my mind, that's like, you know, like a fucking like plus five relation point thing just pops up like, whoop!
Oh, God.
I have a little ship with an Osamu on it and a little one with Kitor on it on opposite sides of the room, and after that I just pushed them a little bit closer together.
Okay. That's gonna do it for Weekly Manga Recap this week. Thank you everyone for joining us for the show. We record the show live on twitch.tv/RoloT, normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, although sometimes we do need to change the time and place up a bit, so be sure to follow us on Twitter to stay updated, and we will tweet you when we are going to start the show and where. He is at RoloT, and I'm at YRoller of Time. Also, be sure to check out our past episodes on weeklymongerecap.podbean.com or iTunes, where you can send us a criticism and, you know, rating, all that stuff. Comment.
Yes, we need it. Here's the thing, guys. We need those reviews. We need to get them in if we want to have any chance of being the woodworkers and getting on that top 100 list. And we haven't had any since the start of June. I don't want to be the guy who's just like, you know, I
fuck
like
guys. What are you doing, man?
Yeah, what you couldn't give us a rating? Like, you know, fucking the Woodman Group. They got like 7
Woodman
probably.
Group.
There's a Korean.
Wait a minute. Is it like a Blue Man Group parody, but all the stuff that they, you know, make instruments out of is made of wood?
Yes, that's what I presume it is. The fake podcast I just made up off the top of my head. We need it, guys. We need the reviews. Make sure you subscribe to it on iTunes. You know, get the podcast over. That helps. There's an algorithm. It's math. You're never meant to understand it. But know this. By giving us 5-star reviews, leaving the comments, subscribing, that helps us out tremendously. So anything you do, guys, I greatly appreciate it.
Additionally, you can email us, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com, and you can send us criticism, ask questions, and make suggestions for future manga for us to read there. Special thanks go out to Steve Mann, our talker. You can check out his artwork at DeviantArt, Narag Fanboy, Tumblr, I Draw Boobs, and Patreon, Steve Mann. Special thanks as well go out to The Infamous Planet, once again, as well as Felix Dark 2 for making the visual editions of our podcast. Hopefully next week we'll have Taiyo no Ye. I've had a lot of delays in trying to read it myself, and I know, Chris, you kind of need some time on it as well.
Yeah.
We will get to it eventually, though. Hopefully
yes.
Next week. So.
Hopefully next week. And also, I just wanted to throw two things out here. One is a quick mention. There was, if you have a subscription to English Shonen Jump, which if you are in a country that has it, I highly recommend you do. We actually got a one-shot this week from an American manga team called Folle à Deux. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's French, of a Japanese medium made by Englishmen. It's too far gone for me. Anyway, though, it was a kind of cool one-shot. If you get the chance, I definitely suggest picking up this issue to give it a check out. My first time running through it, I didn't think much of it, but actually sitting through it and reading it was kind of an interesting little series. Just a one-shot, so I don't know if there's anything coming of it, but just either that or that. But otherwise, though, guys, if you want to, the contest, the raffle to win a copy of Barrage, that was the name of the series. To win a copy of Barrage, Volumes 1 and Volume 2, all you have to do is join the Osamu Bukumu fan club, which you do by messaging Annalise on Twitter. It's completely free. That's all you have to do. Just message her. Give her your contact info. She sends you a card, and then you're in the raffle. We're going to do it at the end of this month. So this is probably going to be the last podcast that's going to be mentioned on. So you want to do it now. And then at the end of the month, we're going to pick someone, and then you get to get a chance to win. And if someone listening to Weekly Manga Recap wins, and you want, I'll sign the books. I might write something from World Trigger to my Heart and Backdoor Part 4 in there, or something goofy in there, if you want to. So, yeah, there you go, guys.
Okay. Yeah, that's going
to
do it.
Oh, shit, I guess we should have something wacky to go out on, right?
Oh, yeah, don't force it, though, you know.
Yeah, we want to force some kind of ending or something like that to one of our podcasts.
No, fuck it. End it now. Do it!